Lucas, we're making a set cream in my kitchen.
Yes.
And we're using some amazing Ndali vanilla here. It's the first time you've used it.
I've seen it, but I haven't used it yet. And I've got some which I haven't used yet. And it's sort of like, it's if you scraped out all of the seeds and just had the seeds, slightly dried, I think, maybe. So you get this bag of essentially vanilla pod innards. And it's amazing. I've probably just put a little bit too much in this cream. I've got some cream and sugar. But I think the flavour is going to be very vanilla-y. And it's really great, really sort of aromatic vanilla. So we'll see how this is. I've got some cream and some sugar and some of this sort of vanilla powder, essentially. I'm just going to warm that up. I'm also going to soak some gelatin in some cold water till it gets sort of spongy and soft. I'll do that while we're put those in there.
Now, is this sort of dish, I mean, it's the sort of dish that you would have in a restaurant.
Yeah, I mean,
and you paid quite good money for this sort of thing if you were sort of eating out somewhere. And yet it's relatively inexpensive and quite simple to make.
It's really simple to make. It's got cream in. We're going to do a slightly lighter version because I've got this cream heating. But later on, I'm going to put some buttermilk in, which gives it a nice sort of slightly yogurty sourness to it, which is really scrummy.
And does that offset the sweetness? Because, I mean, the vanilla is going to add sort of real top notes in there. We've got sugar in there. And I imagine that will stop it from just being like a sort of overly sweet sort of jelly.
Yes, it will. I mean, you can always put, you know, we could put some lemon zest in if we wanted, you know. You can flavour these things in all sorts of ways. You know, you can do some sort of coffee things. You can flavour them with sort of caramel. You can do chocolate, all that sort of thing. But this is just a very, very simple one that I thought we'd have with, you know, to go in the summer, you'd have it with berries or something, but
or rhubarb.
Rhubarb would be brilliant, just really poached in an oven, actually, just sprinkled with sugar and covered with foil and put in the oven, quite a low oven, 150 for 20-25 minutes, and then it keeps its shape and colour. Because you know, if you put rhubarb in a pan, it sort of disintegrates.
Yes, it does, and it sort of goes into this sort of grey, darky, pinky, greeny colour. Whereas if you do it whole, almost, and sort of poach it, then it sort of goes that gorgeous sort of girly pink.
It is. It's sort of like Barbie pink. I made a cocktail recently. Well, actually, last year with some forced rhubarb, and the pink was so amazing. And I made a. There's a Brazilian cocktail called a caipirinha, and I made a version with some rhubarb in the bottom. And it was sort of like a rhubarb syrup, actually, and it just gave it this sort of pink tinge and that sort of intriguing sort of rhubarby flavour. But I'm going to call it a barbarinha, which weirdly turns out to mean, to be like a diminutive of Barbara in Portuguese.
Right.
So barbarinha means like Barbie, which is totally appropriate for a pink drink. So
fantastic. So we think we were going to do something slightly more wintry because we're still it's throwing it down outside, and we thought we could warm up with maybe some caramelised oranges.
I thought we'd just do something. Yeah, it's quite old school, but just peel the oranges, make a caramel sort of syrup, and pour it over them and just let them sort of steep in the... I'm going to slice them as well. I thought that would be quite nice. It'd be quite nice to leave them whole, but you'd have to sort of leave them to soak for quite a long time. So I think I'm just going to do slices. Maybe a bit of the peel, you know, a bit of the peel sort of cooked in some of the caramel at the end. Sorry, just choking. I don't know why. I
have to pass you your wine here.
Yeah,
here we are.
I need some wine. Brilliant.
There we are. So... I mean, this coming back to the vanilla, Lucas, this vanilla is a new product on the market. I mean, I've sort of been using it for a little while.
Yeah.
So far, what do you think? What do you think to the way it's sort of working in this?
No, it's great. I should probably sort of whisk it in a bit, actually, because, you know, because it went in as a sort of powder, I need to just sort of spread it through the cream a little bit.
And is it important for you to have fair trade products?
I think it's good if you can get good quality, good fair trade. Then I think that's brilliant. I completely buy into the idea of fair trade, but I will only support it if actually what I'm getting is really good and is on a par with something that I can get, you know, non-fair trade.
Not just fair trade for the sake of it. So fair trade good is what you're looking at.
I think so, and I think that what's interesting is that when fair trade started, there was this slightly sort of homespun element to it. And it was, you know, bits of basket weaving coming in from wherever. And actually, and, you know, and slightly dodgy coffee, but, you know, and it was sold in sort of fair tradey type shops. And actually now it's become mainstream, but it's become mainstream because there's been huge amounts of work to say, well, actually, you know, we want to buy this. We want to pay you a fair trade premium. We want to help your communities. But actually, you want to, people aren't going to buy it unless it's on a par or better than something that's non-fair trade. So I think that's sort of where we've got to now. And there's huge, I mean, fair trade's grown hugely. And I think it's, I haven't looked into it recently, but the last I heard, and I may be wrong, but the last I heard, certainly at the beginning of sort of recession and all the economic downturn or whatever we're meant to call it, fair trade was holding up really well in a way that, say, organic, which people saw more as a lifestyle choice, wasn't necessarily.
I know, certainly from my point of view, I've tried lots of different vanillas, and this one is probably, for me, is the most aromatic I've come across.
Yeah, it's lovely. I think it's, actually now it's in there, it's really a really lovely, round, rich richness to it. So no, looking forward to that. And actually, I thought I'd put a little bit too much in, but I think it's going to be nice. We don't want it, you don't want sort of sledgehammer vanilla, do you know what I mean? You don't want it sort of whacked around the face, but it's just, it's such an intriguing flavour, vanilla, because people think of it, people think it's sweet, but it's not actually at all, but it's just that we're so accustomed to having it in sort of sweet things, and our mind goes, oh, this is, it's a sweet flavour, but actually it's usually sugar or whatever that makes it sweet. Right, that's, I just literally, you know, brought that to a simmer to just dissolve the sugar.
And then what will we do with this next? Well, we're going to add in some buttermilk, and then...
No, but the buttermilk's not going until a bit later, because I think buttermilk's still quite cold, so I want that to come up. I think it might... what I'm going to do first, I'm just going to leave that to stand for a minute. I'm going to put... I've had some gelatin soaking in some cold water, so it's gone sort of spongy. I'm just going to put that in and leave that in there. And I'm going to let that cool down for a little bit, partly because if I... I want this buttermilk to come to room temperature, but also if I poured this mixture straight into the mould, there's a tendency for the seeds to rise up, so that when you when you turn out the mould, you'll have all the seeds sort of at the top.
So we want that to beautifully disperse.
Yes, I mean, they won't rise, they'll sink, in fact. They'll sink in the liquid, so when you turn it out, they'll be all on top. And I just want it to be speckled throughout. The reason that I'm letting the buttermilk warm up is I think that if you add a cold liquid to this, it will start to, the gelatine will start to clump, maybe. So you'll get little, you know.
And then we're going to poach it.
No, we're not going to poach it at all.
Isn't it? That's it. It is as simple as that.
Basically, so we're warming up some stuff. Mm-hmm. We're adding some gelatin to set it.
Right.
I'm adding this, you know, later, but simply because it's cold. We're just going to put it in some little molds and put it in the fridge, and it will set. I'd say overnight to be safe.
Is there any major difference between this and, say, a panna cotta, for example?
No, I mean, it is. This is a panna cotta, but it's just got some buttermilk in it, so it's just going to change the flavour slightly.
So a pure panna cotta would just be cream?
Just be cream. Yes, I mean, people make panna cottas in different ways. You can sometimes just do this where you heat the cream and the sugar and vanilla and your flavourings or whatever and add the gelatine and set it. Some people lighten the texture by heating some of the cream, whisking some of it, and then stirring that in so that you get a sort of slightly lighter texture. But you know, gelatine's a wonderful thing. It can set all sorts of stuff. There are certain things that have things with milk in actually set firmer with less gelatine.
Right, so add a little bit less than you perhaps would normally.
If you were making a jelly. So if you wanted a jelly to turn out, you might use one sheet of gelatine for 100 mils of liquid, say. This is going to turn out, I'm using three sheets for about 500 mils, so I'm using about 150 to 1, and that's actually quite a lot even for a panna cotta. So we'll see what happens.
That was wonderful, thank you. I didn't realise it. I had no idea it was so simple to make something so gorgeous.
Well, I hope so. This is actually See, this is getting a bit of skin, but I'm going to sieve that before I put it into the molds, just because it will form a little bit of a skin on top. But I think it
smells amazing.
Smells good, doesn't it?